You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
I'm Phil Beatty, the editor-at-large for Times Higher Education. I'm here at the Australian International Education Conference in Canberra, co-hosted by the International Student Recruitment Company, IDP Education. IDP are presenting some new data at the conference. There's a session entitled Inside the Mind of Today's International Students, with some really interesting market intelligence on key markets, Australia, Canada, the USA, UK, and New Zealand. And with me now is Lindell Jacka, the head of market research at IDP, and Kim Dainhoff, the external affairs director, the manager for external affairs at IDP too. So, Lindell, can you give us a summary of the main findings of this new research you've carried out?
Okay, thanks, Phil. What we did was ask students their perceptions of each destination that they were aware of on different attributes of affordability, quality of education, safety, employment opportunities, and government student visa policies. And what we tended to see coming through was, you know, Canada is growing in its reputation. It's safe, it's affordable, but we're also seeing it and also welcoming, and also its quality of education is starting to grow. For the UK and the US, they maintain their position as being number one and number two in terms of quality of education. The US particularly amongst postgraduate students, and we see the UK really has the lead amongst the undergraduate students and the markets such as Hong Kong or Malaysia. For Australia, it's also maintaining its strong reputation. You know, it provides a quality education, safe and welcoming visa policies. However, it is being impacted. It's not seen as affordable as it used to be. Also, and New Zealand, they really come through, similar to Canada, as being safe and affordable, but yet they don't quite have the reputation for quality of education as the other four players in the market.
And your sample, you looked at a fairly large sample of international students from all core markets, so from India, China, from a lot of the providing countries, is that right?
That's right. We spoke to over 1,100 students who have used IDP services, and they came from a broad range of our geographic spread of IDP markets. So we had those from the Middle East, Southeast Asia, China, and a good cohort from India.
So there is a sense that, in general terms, the countries are delivering, your markets are delivering in terms of quality, in terms of the student experience. But is there a growing sense of disparities between the countries? So the UK, for example, we're very concerned as a sector about visa policy and the way it's potentially turning away students or giving the impression that we're not welcoming international students in the same way. Australia obviously has an issue around the strong dollar and the affordability issue. Are you seeing some clear market advantages emerging in some countries versus others?
I think I'd probably go from a challenging point of view for the UK is that they really trail the other markets in terms of graduate employment opportunities. So you can see the impact there of visa reforms that have happened over the last couple of years. They're also seen as less welcoming in terms of the UK in terms of student visa policies and requirements compared to the likes of Canada and Australia that are deemed to be more welcoming. Interesting also, you see the US, while it has a very quality of education, it is seen as less safe amongst most of the students. And we see that particularly amongst Southeast Asian students and Chinese students. And that may not be surprising when you have some of the events that we saw over the last 12 months.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. We've had some pretty serious events in the UK around the riots, around an appalling murder. We had some problems in Australia. But actually, despite these, the responses seem to be that the US still stands out as the problem safety-wise.
I think so. You see more of that. It's probably more regular in the media where you might see, unfortunately, there was the Boston bombings, but also the gun massacres that have happened. So they do, unfortunately, get attention.
And we've heard today at the conference from the new education minister, Chris Pyne. Obviously, he's only just got his feet under the table here in Australia, but he sent out some pretty powerful messages for Australia in terms of how much the government will prioritise international education. I think Australia does have the issue around the strength of the dollar. It's I think, facing mounting competition from countries that are getting more aggressive in the market for international education. America, for example, has always had the numbers, but actually market share, they're pushing hard to get a bigger slice. Mm. What are the challenges for Australia, do you think, in terms of keeping up your sort of leadership in international education?
I think it's really maintaining or growing the quality of education. And I think it's making, just reassuring that Australian education is worth it. So yes, it hasn't the affordable cost advantage that it had previously, but it still is a great education. And I think also being able to provide post-study work opportunities. So not only can you get a great international education, but you can also get a great international experience.
And Kim, there's a sense really now that you've seen the supply market's changing a little bit. We've often had a perception that some countries, you know, only really think about the UK or the US. But in terms of the growth markets, in terms of supply, you think we're seeing some changing perceptions and people's options are widening or their interests are widening. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Phil. I think it's been interesting to see with some of the data that we see at IDP. Obviously, we talk to a lot of students around the world, you know, up around a couple of 100,000 every year. And we look into that data and just try and work out where is the demand changing. We can also see from our IELTS data as well where there's sort of a forward projection, if you like, in terms of the students and people who are undertaking the academic test. They let us know what's their preferred destination. So that also gives you a bit of a forward indicator about where the market demand's likely to change. We can then tie that in with the statistics that come out from, for example, DIAC in Australia, UKBA in the UK and CIC in Canada, and have a look at where the visa grants are changing as well. And when we put that picture together, we can see some real shifts starting to occur. So if you went back a few years ago, China, for example, was a very strong market for Australia, but in the last couple of years, it's really started to boom towards the USA. And if you looked at India, what we would have seen again a couple of years ago, very strong market for Australia, very strong market for the UK, but there's now much more even spread for Canada, US, Australia and the UK as well. So it really is starting to shift. And then there's sort of places where, because the students are living in a much more price-sensitive market, perhaps local currency is not so strong versus other currencies of the destination that they're going to, they're really starting to become much more interested in what the cost is going to be and to try and understand the true cost. So not just the cost of tuition, but also the cost of living has been a really important piece of information that's starting to be talked about a lot more by the students.
So I think there's always been a sense, perhaps, that complacency can creep in when a country or an individual institution says, oh, we'll always have a steady supply from India. You know, we know that market's growing. We know we've got a good relationship with agents in India or what have you. But there's a sense that the market's toughening and complacency really isn't an option. I mean, what does it mean for the institutions themselves in terms of how they go about their strategy, their marketing, their outreach?
Yeah, well, I think one of the things we certainly see is that it's very important that you have multi-channel marketing still. You can't just rely on online or on events or those types of things to attract students. The other big thing in terms of marketing is just understanding referral and referral pattern, because certainly at IDP and what we hear from the institutions is that word of mouth is also really, really important, and it's a growing sense of importance. One of the really interesting things that came out of our research was that when we asked those 1,100 students that Lyndall spoke about, in fact, 93% of them had already referred somebody else to IDP, and lots of them had even referred more than five people. So being able to drive your word of mouth referral, both in the online but also in the face-to-face domain, which we found was still really dominant in that part of your marketing plan, I think that's really where the institutions need to focus on. We also ask the students about where do they go for their information. So lots of them actually go to people who live in country to find out about what the culture's like and what it's like to live there. But they go to the institution to understand what the academic life will be about and what are the academic requirements and things like that. What we found was that online sources are used right across the board. So I think for any institution today, you have to make sure that you're covering the entire student journey in your online presence, whether that's through social media or through web, and just making sure that there's opportunities to ask about all the diverse things that students are really interested in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And Lyndall, if we go back to you, I mean, is there a sort of takeaway message from the research in terms of the big picture? What's the sort of success factor here in terms of making sure you're still on top of the market, that you're still at the forefront as a country and as an institution?
I think, you know, it's becoming an increasingly competitive environment for institutions and destinations. And as we see, most are delivering a quality of education. So it's really how do you take it to that next step? And what we've seen in the research is if the institution or the destination can deliver the broader experience in terms of work integrated opportunities, graduate opportunities, they will gain that competitive advantage in the marketplace.
Okay, so Lyndall and Kim, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Phil.
Thanks, good to see you.
Enjoy the rest of the conference.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.